a guest DJ set from the one and only J-Rock of the world-famous Beat Junkies. And as if that wasn't enough, the man himself is in our studios here at KPFK. How you doing, Jay?
I'm all right. What's up, everybody? Yeah.
It is really, really an honor. A lot of DJs that I know consider you, you know, one of their favorite DJs. You're kind of like a DJ's DJ. And you now have this new record that's just come out, some cold rock stuff on Stone's Throw. And one of the things that was really interesting to me, kind of thinking back from when I first started hearing about you guys out here, I'm originally from Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
And so we didn't really have that same kind of, like DJ community, kind of turntableist culture to like kind of organically grow up. It was more kind of learned from New York or from the Bay Area, from LA. But you seemed like one of the guys who was always innovating on turntables. But as the years kind of went on, other DJs had projects that seemed more kind of about presenting themselves in this kind of recorded way. And it seems like it's taken a long time for you to have this kind of project, this. Because this is technically, even though you've done tons of mixes, this is really technically your debut kind of full-length record. Mm-hmm. Why do you think it took so long for you to get a full-length record out like this?
Wasn't really no need to do anything yet. I mean, perfecting my craft, basically. Yeah. I mean, like you said, everybody else was coming out with stuff. So, you know, it wasn't really... I saw how that was doing, and I see the reaction to all that, so it's like I didn't want to come out with a turntables per se album, you know, like a bunch of jigga jiggas, and you know, like, I mean, nothing wrong with that, but I didn't want to come out with the album with just me doing drums and like a D Styles album or something like that. That wasn't my style, so like I think back then that was what people would have expected, you know, so like all this time I've just been building up the name, and you know, ain't really no rush, you know, I've been working on stuff anyway, do stuff with Madlib or, you know, do stuff with, you know, the crew or whoever calls, but you know, so there was really no rush to do it.
And I would think with, you know, when you put together mixes, there's kind of either a particular theme that kind of serves to kind of bring the mix together, or there's a certain flow, like when you're putting together mixes for like a club night or when you're, you know, doing a party or something like that. What was the process like for you doing this record and kind of and putting it together? Because the record goes all over the place. There's a lot of different styles, a lot of different sounds, a lot of times even within tracks, it goes in really different places. I was just really interested in kind of how you kind of got that process together of getting the record together, getting these sounds together.
It was a long process. I mean, I just did a lot of different stuff and just tried until it worked. It just took bits and pieces, a little bit of everything, and just tried different little tidbits here and there. And I was just trying to make it entertaining. Everyone has a short attention span these days. So I was just basically just trying to make it like something that'll catch your attention. And, like, the songs that don't really move on and have, like, 1,000 breakdowns, I made those short and sweet, you know what I mean? And, like, the songs that are all crazy and, like you say, go everywhere, those are, like, you know, 5-minute songs. And so, I mean, that's how I was looking at it, just, like, trying to make it entertaining, more or less, not really. I didn't focus on too much. I was, like, you know, I would work on it, and if it was sounding like something, then I would keep going on, and if it wasn't sounding like anything, I would stop doing what I was doing with that one and keep moving on with something else. So, I mean, I was just trying to make it, like I said, short attention span theater, so that's what I was really aiming for.
Did you start off with like a particular idea or with a particular song and it kind of built from there, or was it kind of like, it sounds almost like it was more like all these little fragments that then you kind of put together like a puzzle.
Yeah, fragments like a puzzle. Yeah, but definitely like a bunch of just different, I mean, stuff I was working on, you know, for the album, but it was just fragments put together. Like even old songs got taken and put on new tracks, you know, stuff I wasn't using for this track. I ended up taking, using for another track. You know, like everything got mashed up at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, definitely a jigsaw puzzle going on.
How much of the record is sample based?
Probably all of it.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't play, like, lay any keys in there or anything?
Like, subtle keys, like, you know, little seasoning, stuff that you wouldn't be able to know that was a key.
Uh-huh.
You know, stuff like that, but not really, like, a prominent, like, I didn't get on there and break down a drum and start, start playing keys. I'm not doing any of that.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm not playing any horns or not doing anything like that, so it's just all sample bass. And then, like I said, if anything, play like a bass line, or if I found a sample, you know, try to play something underneath it just to accent and give it a little seasoning, more or less.
How many, I don't know if you actually, like, had everything laid out, but how many samples do you think were roughly in that?
I can't even tell you. I don't even know. Hundreds, probably.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, each song probably consists of at least 10, you know, mm-hmm. 7 or 10, you know.
Yeah.
It's not just like the break and the loop. It may sound like just a break and a loop, but then, like, if you really put your headphones on and, you know, let it ride in your headphones or whatever, you might hear some different stuff,
mm-hmm.
something different in the background each and every time. So there's like always, there's all kind of little layers and things going on. So I don't even know.
I was thinking when that, what was it called? The DVD, the Secondhand Sure Shots
mm-hmm.
thing came out. I was watching that and listening to the tracks that you guys created, and part of me was thinking, like, man, why doesn't J-Rock put out a record? I was like, did that kind of working on that project kind of spark you towards kind of building something larger?
No, I was working on the album even during that time.
Oh, for a while, huh?
Yeah, I've been working on that album for a minute. Mm-hmm. Like, if I probably didn't make the album, that track probably would have made the album, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that was, I was working on the album even during that process.
Hmm. And there are these mystery discs that are also included in virtually all of them. I think there's three separate ones. It's kind of a mystery which one.
There's two separate CDs.
Uh-huh.
And, like, the third one is basically the vinyl version.
Okay.
The vinyl version's a mystery disc, but that's like a combination of one and two.
Huh.
So there's two, like, actual quote-unquote mystery discs.
Hmm.
And the third, the confusing third is the actual, the vinyl is a mystery disc.
Huh.
So that's like a combination of, like I said, one and two.
Cool.
On vinyl.
Huh. Pretty, pretty cool. Do you think this is going to be the start of kind of a new chapter in your career?
We're shooting the dice. We're going to roll a 7 out the gate. We're going to do it. We are 7 or 11. So we go. I hope, you know, can't DJ forever in the club. I'm not going to be 60 years old up there DJing. So we got to get some type of other things cracking. Now, we'll see. I mean, I've always made beats. I've always done stuff. I've done stuff for Visionaries, done stuff for, you know, Grouch and Eli, and done a track for Karis One. And, you know, I'm always on the road with Black Star and Madlib. So, I mean, I'm already have a busy schedule as it is. So, like, I mean, even as long as even those dudes are in business, I'm in business, basically.
Mm.
You know, so, yeah, I mean, this is just something I've always wanted to do anyway. You know, I look up to a lot of cats, you know, in my day, and even cats, like you said, cats that have put out albums.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've listened to those albums, man, you know, and have the critic's voice in my head. You know, of course, I give it props, and, you know, I purchased and supported and stuff. It was one of the homies. But, you know, you always wanted, like, you know, try to do your best. So that's all that is.
Yeah, it's nice to finally have that kind of statement from you, because, I mean, there wasn't much else that you haven't done as a DJ.
Nah, there's always mixtapes and stuff, you know, nothing original. So, you know, had to get it off at least once, try to get it off twice.
Hmm.
But, you know, had to do it once, definitely do it once. And thanks to, you know, Stone's Throw for even putting it out there like that. So, and with all the crazy packaging and, you know, stickers and even a mystery disc, you know what I'm saying? Just eye catchers, you know.
Yeah.
That's all I, you know, needed, some eye catchers.
Yeah, they definitely, you know, Stone Store has always been a really, really solid independent label, you know, since its founding. But they seem like they're really stepping things up in the last couple of years with not just with the music, which has always been pretty good, but with the packaging and just like kind of new creative ideas and ways to package music.
Got to nowadays. Mm. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, you got some kind of gimmick. Even, you know, Mayor Hawthorne with the heart shape mm-hmm. record, and, you know, I Need a Dollar. I Love Black came with a dollar in it, you know, so there's always kind of, you need something. Eye catcher. You need some kind of eye catcher these days for someone to purchase it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? They're definitely going on there and downloading it, or they can just watch it on YouTube over and over. There's no need to buy music anymore. Yeah. You can just go online and find it for free. You don't even have to download it, you know. You can just find it for free to stream
mm-hmm.
and just to listen to and be like, oh, I like that. And it always will be there, you know. So you don't really need to go out and actually physical purchase unless you want to go ride in your car with it.
Mm-hmm.
And shoot, nowadays people probably have their iPod hooked up on that anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So you got to, they probably, from the iPod that recorded it from YouTube with some janky some janky little thing they get from the internet. Oh, I'm going to record it from the YouTube video. Yeah. But see, you take your, the thing with a computer nowadays, everybody's used to that sound.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, no one's really, like, I don't know about everyone, but I don't think too many people are bumping the computer with speakers hooked up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? They're probably just happy with the computer speakers. Or they might get some little cheap little speakers that turn up the computer sound of the speakers. You know, like, mm-hmm. I got these external speakers, I'm going to hook these up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like the computer speakers, but louder. They ain't really a true sound. So it's like not everyone hears a true sound of a lot of recordings. So even downloading stuff sucks because you're not getting that. You know, you have your vinyl show, so... Yeah. I'm preaching to the choir right now, so.
Yeah, it is, you know, there's kind of like two levels of it, both kind of how the industry has gone and how that's affected customers, and also just kind of how DJing has changed in the last, you know, 5-6 years since really the introduction of Serato and, mm-hmm. and kind of becoming a standard for a lot of DJs. And I know you use Serato. I was thinking just how do you feel like Serato has affected DJing, maybe both from like the technical and skill side of it, and also from just like maybe the music appreciation kind of thing.
Made everybody's short attention span, and everybody now is a DJ. Everybody got iTunes. Everybody went out and downloaded all their stuff, and they can go out and down. People even download Serato that don't even have a box. You know what I mean? Like that don't have the actual Serato hardware at home. They just downloaded that on their computer, and then when they go to the club, they have it so they can DJ at the club, and then they go back home and just listen to iTunes. They don't practice. They don't have turntables at home. Like, there's people like that, you know? So, I mean, it sucks, but it's good for... And there's two type of DJs that use Serato. There's whack ones, ones that just got iTunes and want to do their stuff like that. Just, I love music and I'm going to go and DJ.
Uh-huh.
And then there's real DJs like me and Jazzy Jeff and like real DJs that really need it for traveling. And like, ain't nobody trying to bring 50, you know, a big old box of 60, 50, 100 records, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's, and nowadays you got to pay when you fly and for checking luggage, if you bring too much. So it's like, that's helped out a lot with that whole aspect of DJing. But like I said, it just made everybody want to DJ. You know, everybody think they can DJ, and, you know, I mean, no problem with that. You like music, you like music. But, you know, don't put DJ in front of your name. You know, just go by your government name, or, you know, just don't put DJ in front of your name. It's just like everybody wants to be a DJ. I mean, you got rap artists DJing, you got R&B singers DJing, you got celebrities DJing. So, I mean, no, one thing I would have to say, even like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was a DJ. But you didn't hear him about him going to the club DJing at the club or, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? It was a hobby for him.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He knew he wasn't no DJ.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen pictures of him with two turntables and got, like, a good wall shelf of records. And, like, he was really trying to get busy at the house back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't hear about him. Nowadays, people aren't like that. People get that, oh, man, I'm a DJ. Like, automatic, as soon as they get the Serato. So. Yeah. I mean, it's a gift and a curse at the same time. I'm not mad. I'm with it. I need it. So, I mean, I still buy records nonstop. Probably where half my money goes is vinyl, like mm-hmm. nonstop.
That was what I was going to ask you, whether or not kind of using Serato now has affected your vinyl buying.
Not my buying habits. Made it worse.
Really?
It seems like it because you want to digitize everything. Like,
uh-huh.
Even stupid albums, you know, I'm going to digitize this whole album, like for no purpose at all. You know you're not going to play it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I still buy my records. I still definitely, I mean, actually MP3s and downloading made me smarter on my music. Shoot, you know what I mean? Like, because I don't use it just to gank artists and do all that. I'm using it. I'm like, my number one website is Discogs. Like, that's all I go to.
Mm-hmm.
I look up artists all day and figure out what they got out, write it down, go to a record store, go do some investigation, can't find it at the store, do some Googling. That's what it looks like. You know, like, it totally made me dig even more for different stuff even that's even out there.
Yeah, in some ways, I feel like that's kind of been the deal with me, too. Like, with all this more technology, it's both made me appreciate the vinyl, maybe because I've never been able to kind of just get with that heavily compressed sound mm-hmm. for digital stuff, and I love the warmth of vinyl and just the feel and the sound of it,
mm-hmm.
even when it's extra scratchy. Like, that just, it sounds, I like I won't clean up stuff, you know, like when
I digitize it,
it's like I want all the mm-hmm. all the, you know,
popcorn.
Things in there. Mm-hmm. That popping popcorn or mm-hmm. The crackling catfish.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, it seems like Serato maybe has had that kind of effect, too, at least for some people. In some ways, it seems like it's made some of the vinyl more valuable.
I think vinyl is always going to be valuable mm-hmm. without the MP3s. Some vinyl, more valuable because of the MP3s and all that stuff being out there. Then people hear it and the price goes up on the record a little bit more each time. And you can go online and go look up the price of the record. Like, it's ridiculous, man. But it's definitely opened the gates to new music. And, you know, now you hear about something. And like I said earlier, you can go on YouTube and everything. Every song in the world's probably on. Not every song, but crazy stuff's on YouTube.
Yeah.
So you just boop, boop, boop. Oop, up there, it's on there. Okay, mm-hmm. listen to it, and then you go do your investigation.
Yeah, there've been several times where I've like, because I don't have internet on my phone, so mm-hmm. I like be at a store and like might put it on hold, swing back to the house, and like check up on YouTube, and be like, oh yes, that is something I need, mm-hmm. and go back to get the record. And it's definitely just something you wouldn't have been able to do in the '90s or even the early 2000s. You know, so it is, like you said, this kind of blessing and a curse at the same time. Just out of curiosity, what do you have a favorite record?
Favorite record?
Yeah. Either that you actually have or one that you've been looking for a long time?
Mm-mm.
I know you must have a ton of records.
I've
seen several pictures of kind
of
your spot.
I have a bunch of favorite records.
Yeah.
I don't know what my favorite record would be. Like, I don't have a...
What might be a few of them?
Well, I know John Coltrane, like, Love Supreme's, like, mm-hmm. always my album. If I need something to listen to, it's never boring to me,
mm-hmm.
you know? But then, like, even, like, Richard Pryor, that Negro's Crazy album, mm-hmm. like, that one to me is, like, I could listen to that over and over again. Like, even comedy albums. I like comedy albums a lot. And then, like, a lot of rock, prog rock stuff. Like, there's a lot of stuff I like grab, but like right off the top, it would be like some junk, some cool out jazz or something to keep me laughing,
mm-hmm.
you know, if it was my last, you know, your last CD, you're going to be bummed out all day. You need something to, I don't want memories of the jokes. I want to listen to my man Richard tell them. So
mm-hmm.
That would be my other record. But yeah, I don't know. I don't have a favorite. Hmm. Like my one last dying record. It would have to be the John. That would be it.
Oh, that's, Love Supreme. That's a good one to choose.
That's my one. That's my only record. That one, I don't want to hit. Yeah, that's my only record.
Hmm.
I can go on all day, but yeah, that's it.
What do you got going up next? I think you were saying that you're getting ready to go overseas for a bit.
Go overseas on tour over there. Got like a bunch of weeks over there, and then come home and got a couple shows like in Frisco, and you know, trying to hook something up in Canada. Go up there, but you know, play it by ear. I know it's a little early in the game still right now, so it's only I know. I don't want to book nothing 4 or 3 months ahead of time, so I'll book that like in 2 months. Right now, I'm barely getting through May. Shit, yeah. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to be gone all of May, so I got to think of that first, you know?
How different is that experience playing out to crowds overseas as opposed to here in the States or especially like in L.A.?
It just depends. Like out here, I don't know. Depends on the gig. Like some gigs, people just want to stare, and some people want to dance. You know what I mean? So it's like, actually, I would have to say L.A., people just dance. It used to be reversed.
Uh-huh.
Like people out here now when I DJ, they'll just dance. But now when I go overseas, it's like a staring contest. And it's like, you got to try to break them into like moving somewhat. It depends where I'm at overseas, of course. Like London's always cracking. They're always grooving and like. If I go like to Germany or to like, I'm going to one of those type of spots or a Paris, it depends on the crowd. Like some crowd just got that front row of heads that just want to just stare at you and nod your head all night. Like, I didn't come here to do this. You know, I didn't come here to play Eighth Wonder and Champ. I'm trying to play something like this, you know, like some Bug Out for a second.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever. But, you know, it's still a good time. I'm not complaining. I adapt to each situation, so it's not like I'm out there and mad and going, you know, driving myself crazy. I'm just like, all right, it's one of those crowds. Let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, they want to just sit there and, you know, say hey and ho and, you know, be on a roller coaster all night. Then that's what we're going to have to do, you know. We're going to have to do a show, basically. It's not going to be just up here DJing.
Yeah.
You know, because if you're just up there DJing, just blending records, you can just feel the eyes just looking at you. So, you know, you got to give them something to take the attention away from just staring at you all night. You know, give them something to cheer and yell about.
Yeah, and, again, I think that's one of the reasons why you've had this longevity and why so many, not just, you know, like fans of hip-hop or just good music appreciate the work you do, but so many of your peers, other DJs, you know, really respect what you do because it you encompass all those different aspects and especially that, you know, that desire to get people moving with music, you know? And so it's really been an honor to have you in here chat with me for a bit. And hopefully we'll be able to get you to swing through for a later date, another
yeah,
record.
Yeah, yeah, come another date. Play a longer set, man. Yeah. Take over the whole show. Over here with you. We'll both bring vinyl and just go back and forth, one for one.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, that'd be fun. That'd be real fun.
I would love it.
I'll bring a whole bag. Get crazy.
Cool, man. My guest has been J-Rock, and once again, I can't thank you enough for coming through, man.
Yep. Talkathon. Sorry, everybody. Like to talk up here.
But we also have music. You know,
yes,
you have a great set from you, and we're going to leave you with music from the record. Cold Rock Stuff is the name of the record on Stone Throw. Some Cold Rock Stuff, and this is a track from it called Play This also from J-Rock here on KPFK.
Word up.
Thank you.